So listener discretion is advised for listeners under the age of 13. This episode contains themes of murder, suicide, and drug use.
In November 1970, in southwestern Norway, a father and his two daughters were hiking in the Isdalen Valley when they came across a grisly sight, a human body. It was lying between two boulders. The three quickly retreated and notified the police. This was the start of the puzzling, unsolved mystery. It's a mystery that has intrigued Norway for nearly 50 years. Hey Wanderers, welcome back to another Foolish Wanderers podcast, the podcast about anything and everything. This is take two of our, what was supposed to be our previous episode, our 60th episode. We are talking about the Isdal woman, a cold case. So, you know, like how we said the Somerton Man was our one and only true crime episode?
We lied.
Twas a lie.
Twas a lie. We're back for more.
Is it bad that true crime is kind of interesting? And it's intriguing?
I mean, I think it's interesting to us because most people can't really fathom what it would or try to or understand what it would take to like murder another human being.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just, yeah. So I think it's just very interesting to people to, you know, listen to stories that are sad.
Yeah. It's a morbid side. Well, even like, I don't know, was it Edwardian times? Where people would look at the papers and they'd have true crime, either like true or just like made up stories, and they'd follow along by these papers every week to read the next part of the story. So like even like basically throughout history, people have been finding true crime fascinating, but it's still kind of odd that we find it fascinating.
Yeah.
Even like in the Paris morgue, they would go and look at dead bodies. Like it would be a fun thing for the family to go to, like bring your kids.
Oh, is that like in the late 1800s, like early 1900s?
I believe so. Let me look up when it was actually built. I think, let's see.
Yeah, so like, I remember like reading some little short thing about the Paris morgues and how certain bodies from like their cause of death or whatever, if they were like a beautiful or handsome when they were alive, they'd become very popular and people would write stories, like fake stories about them. And
oh, that's weird.
They were kind of like celebrities. In a way, very weird.
Isn't that how Resuscitation Anne, like the CPR doll? I think her face was modeled after one of these people in the Paris morgue.
In the Paris morgue?
I believe so, because she was supposed to be a beautiful woman. And so people found her so beautiful, they kept coming to look at her. And that's, someone made a cast of her face. And that's how we got Resuscitation Annie. Isn't that weird?
The more you know. So odd.
Let's see. Yeah, it was like in the late 1800s, I believe.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah. Yep, 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
All right, shall we get into it?
Let's get into it. So, Katrina, have you heard about the Isdal woman at all, or?
Well, I mean, this is take two of this.
I know. I'm still trying to keep it like going, even though God hates this episode and he hates us and does not want us to do this episode.
Yeah, we've had so many technical difficulties.
So many technical difficulties. This is a cursed episode, just so all the listeners know.
Yeah, there's been a couple episodes where it's just a lot of technical difficulties that have happened, but this is probably the most. But no, I don't think I heard about this one before you brought it up.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're going to hear it again for like the third time today.
Okay.
Here we go. This is the Isdal woman again.
Okay.
Okay, so I went down the rabbit hole and through the other side for this episode. I did a lot of research and I grabbed a lot of different things and hodgepodged it together. And by the end of when I was done with my presentation, it just didn't have a great coherent flow, I would say.
Okay.
So I don't want to confuse anyone because this is a very interesting kind of creepy story.
Yeah.
So today I decided that we would mostly go off of a BBC article from 2017 that it really goes through all the major points and paints more of, I think, a better, more visual story for the listeners.
Okay.
So we will be going with that. And then after, you know, throughout the story, I will be adding little blips from other articles and from my own research, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah.
All right, here we go. So everyone knows I am referring from, or reading from, The Isdal Woman, The Mysterious Death Haunting Norway for 46 Years by Hillier Chung from the BBC News.
I'll put the link to this article, too, in the description of this episode, so if you guys want to follow along or just look at the images and things, because there's some interesting images in this article, too.
Yep, just help you, like, play, like, vision. I'm a visual learner, so I like pictures and books. Yeah. I don't know if that makes me like more, seems, you know, less intelligent or whatever. And I'm like, I need pictures in my books.
No, but I don't think so. It just helps
me set the scene better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, so here we go, people. This is the Isdal Woman. So it's a mystery that has intrigued Norway for nearly 50 years. And in November of 1970, the badly burnt body of a woman was found in a remote spot in Norway's Isdalen Valley.
That's so sad.
Yeah, it's sad. But, I mean, this whole story is sad. It's great that in like 5 seconds in the story, already said it's so sad.
It's sad. Well,
we haven't even got to the worst parts yet.
No.
Someone had cut the labels off her clothes and scraped distinctive marks off her belongings as if to stop her from being identified.
So just like the Summerton man, right? Like all those labels on his clothes and everything, those were removed.
Exactly. So, and if any of our listeners did not listen to our episode on the Summerton man cold case, that is episode 43.
Yes, you should listen to it. It's pretty good.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, it is.
And as police started investigating her death, they uncovered a trail of coded messages, disguises, and fake identities, but they never were able to crack the case.
So from that, it's kind of obvious it's a spy kind of situation, right? Like multiple fake identities, disguises. At least to me, this is a spy.
Oh, right? Yeah. So, but it gets weird, though. Like, the evidence mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily automatically point to her being a spy.
That's true. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So this is the story of the Isdal woman and the perplexing trail of clues she left behind.
Ooh. It sounds like an intro to, like, a movie, like on a trailer.
Yeah, it does. So here we go. This is chapter one. Clue one, the body in Death Valley. On the morning of the 29th of November in 1970, a man and his two daughters see a body in Isdalen Valley. The corpse is sprawled across some rocks with its arms extended in a boxer position, typical of bodies that have been burnt. Now, we said the boxing position sort of in burnt bodies sort of looks like the old-timey Victorian illustrations of boxers. You know, mm-hmm. like the weird, the guy. It was, why was it always, they always put it as a white guy.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And, yeah, very rarely was, yeah, you know, always a white guy, whatever, with a mustache. And he has his hands up, like, put him up, like yep. that. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the position, the boxer body, or boxer position.
Yeah, it's a defensive pose, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Isdalen is known to some locals as Death Valley. It was the site where people committed suicide in medieval times. And in the 1960s, some hikers had fallen to their deaths while trekking in the fog.
So it's like steep then, right? Like it's a steep drop.
Oh, yeah. I think, I mean, I've never been to Norway, but I mean, mm-hmm. from the pictures and everything, a lot of mountains, a lot of hills, pretty steep.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. But the issue is the woman did not appear to be a normal hiker. Mm-hmm. So, quote, it was out of the way and it was an unusual place to walk. Carl Halvor Aas, a police lawyer who was one of the first officers to be called to the scene, recounts to the BBC. He remembers, quote, a strong smell of burnt flesh.
Ugh, and that'll be seared into your nostrils for days. Ugh.
Yeah, it's gross. Like even with, like, Inka, my dog, like, if she poops, like, does, like, a stealth poop in the closet, and you clean it up.
Oh, no.
Like, the stench, like, the smell does kind of, like, burn in your nostrils for just her little dog poop. And so I cannot imagine what, like, a burnt body, like, how long that must, like, linger.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to know.
Yeah.
No.
All right. So back to the story. So, quote, the body was burned all over the front, including the face and most of her hair, he says. But strangely, it was not burnt on the back.
Which is kind of scary, too, because it's like they either she fell backwards or they laid her on her back and then someone like was lit on fire when she was on her back. But that's terrifying to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like she was trying to get away.
So it looked like she had thrown herself back from a fire, he says, adding that she was so badly burnt they could not imagine what she originally looked like. So they had, because I guess you could sort of, you know, see from like the features, but there was no features to be seen anymore.
Yeah, I mean, even with like facial reconstruction, even some of the best facial reconstruction artists we have, right, that like do like sketches and stuff, they've done studies where they like they've given some of these artists animal skulls and like show us what this animal would look like, and it's completely different for the actual
and what
animal.
It actually is. They're like, here's this chicken, show us what it is.
Yeah, but it's like a velociraptor or something.
Oh my gosh,
it's so, at least there's like one study I've heard of that's done that, and it's kind of amazing because I'm sure with a human it's different, right, because you can kind of, there's maybe a little bit different bone structure, but it's it's weird because you'd think that they'd be so good at it, but I suppose if they didn't study animal skulls, then it's kind of like, okay, you know, I give you that one too. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was funny.
Yeah, that's funny. I mean, every system has its flaws. Nothing's perfect.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So back to the very unperfect story. So the scene is cold by the time Carl arrived, so he cannot tell how long the body has been there for. And how did the woman end up on fire? Remember, this is like a hiking trail in the mountains.
Yeah. Very not weird camping.
Not yet. So clue two, the objects. Police find a number of objects at the scene, including jewelry, a watch, a broken umbrella, and some bottles. But it is the positioning of the objects that leaves the strongest impression on Tormod Bones. It's literally spelled bones, but with one of those, like, Scandinavian slashes to the O's. I don't really know what it's called. Sorry.
Yeah, I think it's just Bones, which is a very fitting name.
Which is a very, yeah, Tormod Bones is a very fitting name for a forensic investigator.
Yeah, I like it.
Like, if your last name is Bones, you either have to be a forensic investigator or, like, a doctor.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
Like, being, like, a funeral mortician or something like that's kind of too morbid, I think. Too on the nose.
Yeah, I like forensic investigator. I like that one.
Mm-hmm. So, this is what Tormod Bones says about the weird positioning of the objects next to the body.
Okay.
The woman is not wearing the watch or her jewelry. Instead, they have been placed beside her. The placement and location of the objects surrounding the body was strange. It looked like there had been some kind of ceremony, he says.
Which is even creepier because
so creepy.
It's like, it's very obvious that it's someone else did this to her, right? Because she, most likely you're not going to set up this like little shrine or whatever to light yourself on fire, right?
I hope not.
Yeah, I hope not.
So police also find the remains of a pair of rubber boots and nylon stockings. She had been wearing a lot of clothes of synthetic materials and all of the clothes had been heavily burned, says Tormod. Adding to the mystery is the fact that the production labels have been cut off her clothes and rubbed off the bottles at the scene.
So they couldn't track her, like they couldn't figure out where she'd been and stuff, and like what store she'd been to.
Yeah, so they wouldn't know what brand anything was.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing was really obvious. So like she had like medicine bottles or like perfume or anything. All the label was off, so you didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Police find nothing at the scene to indicate who the woman was. So no ID, nothing like that. Okay, so police issue an appeal for witnesses. They say the woman was about 5 feet, 4.5 inches tall, with long brownish black hair, a small round face, brown eyes, and small ears. She appeared to be aged between 25 and 40 years old, which I feel like that's the biggest, that's like range.
That's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot of years.
That's you couldn't, I was like, why couldn't they have like narrowed it down anymore? I don't know.
I guess I don't know forensics really, but I wonder if it's like to do with like how your bones have fused or like wearing hair on your bone.
Yeah, good point.
Or like, so it could be like the age gap kind of,
or like
in there.
Teeth, like wear on teeth or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the woman wore her hair in a ponytail tied with a blue and white print ribbon at the time of her death. Again, this I don't know if hikers wear that, but I wouldn't wear
ribbons
while I was hiking.
I suppose it depends on the person.
It kind of, I mean, it's true, but just to me, it seems like it's more like dressed up, like you're make dressy.
And you also wouldn't bring a bunch of jewelry with you, right? Most likely.
Oh, I, yeah, no. So, without a name, the woman becomes known as the Istal Woman. The story is big news in Bergen, which is a peaceful town with a low crime rate. A few days later, police find a clue.
Ooh.
So this is clue three, the suitcases. They find two suitcases at Bergen Railway Station's left luggage department, which is funny because, I mean, it's not funny, but it's like circumstantial funny because the Somerton man, that's where they found his luggage as well, at a train station.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So one of the suitcases contains prescription-free glasses, and a fingerprint on one of the pairs matches the woman's.
That's kind of cool that they got a fingerprint off that. Mm-hmm.
But it's weird to me that she has prescription-free glasses. Like, why would you want to wear glasses if you didn't need to? Unless disguise. You were a spy. Yeah, yeah. Disguise.
Or fashion. I mean,
people I guess fashion, so. Though. I mean, there's always, like, the kids in elementary school that are jealous of people that have glasses, so they get, like, prescription-free glasses, or they take a pair of their parents, and they, like, poke out the lenses and just wear, like, the frames.
Yeah.
So she could be one of those.
Yeah, it could be.
She'd be a FOMO, fear of missing out.
Out of bad eyesight, yes.
Out of bad eyesight. So, what is that then?
Fear of missing out of bad eyesight?
Yeah. Well, how would you say that? FOMUDST?
I don't think it needs an acronym.
It needs an acronym.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
FOMOBIS or something like that. It's weird.
FOMUBI? It's like FOMUBI. So FOMUBI. Yeah. FOMUBI. Fear of missing out of bad eyesight. Because eyesight's one word, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, FOMUBI.
Yeah, FOMUBI. Yeah.
FOMUBI. Sounds yep. French. So the suitcases. Oh, back to the suitcase. So the suitcases also contain clothes, several wigs, German and Norwegian money, and Belgian, British, and Swiss coins, a comb and a hairbrush, cosmetics, some teaspoons, a tube of eczema cream. Like, I mean, all that's like, most of that sounds normal, but then when you get to several wigs.
Yeah, several wigs. And for some reason, some teaspoons. That sticks out to me too. I'm like, why do you have teaspoons?
Oh, yeah. Why does she have teaspoons? That's weird. And yeah. I mean, that is odd that she has all this kinds of different money from all these countries. Like, but maybe she was just traveling. Like, she was just on a really long vacation.
That's my thought, with like with different money and stuff. I mean, if you're traveling Europe, you know, you got a lot of different currency.
Exactly. But, that's why they have the euro in a lot of countries now, just to help out with that.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So initially, police were very optimistic because they thought the suitcases would help them identify the body, says Tormod.
Which
you think they would. But soon, they realized that, quote, all the labels that could have identified the woman, her clothes or belongings, had been removed. End quote.
In the suitcase, too?
Oh, yeah. All of it.
Oh, okay. That's weird, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Even the prescription... It gets even weirder. Even the prescription sticker on the eczema cream, which would have shown the name of the doctor and the patient, had been scraped off.
Yeah, that's weird. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can see, like, labels may be removed, because I know some people have, like, sensory issues with, like, the scratchiness of tags and stuff. So, like, that to me is not, like, it's weird, but it's not, like, oh, why does this scream weird? You know, it's, like, but the eczema thing, that kind of, that's weirder to me.
See, the labels and stuff is weird to me, but the, ripping off, like, the eczema cream, like, label for, like, the prescription and the doctor and, like, your name, that isn't odd to me, because if I was traveling, maybe I wouldn't want people to know, like, the doctor, because then they could Google where the doctor's from and then kind of know where I'm from. I don't know. Like, maybe just, like, private. Maybe she's very private.
That could be a very private person.
Mm-hmm. So police try hard to trace the woman's belongings. They even contact several major department stores abroad, including the Galerie Lafayette in Paris, to see if the store recognizes any of the packaging on the woman's makeup. So they're just like contacting Macy's and stuff, basically, and like JCPenney's. And they're like, do you have this? Do you have that? Because just think about, I mean, it's kind of weird to us now in like 2022 to be like, they contact a department store. What the heck? But just think, this is in 1970. So there were very few stores. Like, I'm sure a lot of people like shopped at a department store for their clothes. And
oh, yeah.
Like that was their Amazon or like their Target and stuff.
It's like specific brands for different stores and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but none of the department stores could find a match. There is also a mysterious coded note in the case, which police will not crack until a little while later, which we'll talk about. So just keep that in the back of your head, okay?
Okay.
Keep that simmering on the burner in the back of your head.
All right. Keep it on the back. Got it.
There is one important piece of evidence in the suitcase, a plastic bag from Oscar Rutweit's footwear store, a shoe shop in Stavanger. The owner's son, Rolf Rutweit, remembers selling a pair of rubber boots to, quote, a very well-dressed, nice-looking woman with dark hair. Just in my research, like, in my presentation, I came across a lot of other eyewitnesses that remember seeing her.
Okay.
And they always said, they're like, oh, she was very nice, nicely dressed, she was very beautiful, and she had dark hair. And you're kind of like, how do they just remember, like, one random chick? We have to remember that this is 1970 in Norway, in sort of a remote village, like town. So most people know each other and or are Norwegian. So they have, you know, what do they say about Norwegians? It's fair hair and fair skin, right?
Yeah, it's just like light features. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So seeing a woman, you know, dark hair in that little village, mm-hmm. kind of, you would stick with you.
Yeah, you'd see it and be like, oh, cool. Someone different. Pretty. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Stick in your head, yeah.
So the boots he sold her appeared to match the boots found on the body in the Isdalen Valley. Police believe that the umbrella found near the body was also bought from the store. So Rolf says the woman had made an impression on him because, quote, she took a long time choosing her boots, much longer than the average customer.
Okay.
She spoke English with an accent and had a calm and quiet expression, he tells the BBC. He also recalls a strong smell emanating from the woman, which later he thinks may have been garlic. And again, people, we have to remember that this is Norway. This is a Scandinavian country. Their diet does not consist of garlic, especially
not usually,
especially not in 1970.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure like they got it. They like had it sometimes, but it wasn't like a main staple.
Mm-hmm. So. I think, remember, like one of the other takes that we took of this episode, you had Googled it and you found that they would only really get garlic from like a pizza.
Yeah, I was like, if from like kind of like Italian versions mm-hmm. of dishes and things. Yeah, like they add it to that. Yeah.
Okay. So using his description, police are able to trace the woman to St. Svithin Hotel nearby, where she checked in as Fenella Lorch. The problem, Fenella Lorch wasn't her real name.
Dun, dun, dun.
She picked an ugly name.
I like Fenella. That's kind of
you like Fenella?
It's not that bad.
Sounds like vanilla, but like you forgot how it to does. Say it. So you're like, Fenella? You're like, no, nope, like vanilla.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like when my brother and I, when we were little, probably my sister too, but we used to struggle saying yellow, say lello.
Lello. Don't like kids have problems saying spaghetti too?
Oh yeah, a lot of words.
Paschetti yeah. or something.
Something like right. that, yeah.
I mean, I still have problems saying words and I'm, you know, almost 50.
No, you're not.
In like how many years?
Yeah.
In a few decades.
Yeah.
In a few decades, I will be 50. One day I'll be 50.
Yes.
All right. Back to the story. So clue floor. Oh my God. Clue four, the hotel forms. It emerges that the woman had stayed in several hotels in Norway using different aliases. And since most hotels require guests to show a passport and fill in a check-in form, this means she would have to have several fake passports.
Which wouldn't be for like a normal person, right? So she'd have to be either like a spy or be working with somebody, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Or she was very paranoid. I mean, we don't really...
It could be.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money, though, to get...
That's a lot of money. So police find the woman had stayed in the following hotels under these names. Here's some examples of the names that she used. Genevieve Lancer, Claudia Tilt, Claudia Nielsen. So she really liked using Claudia as a name.
It's a pretty name. I like
it's a pretty name. Alexia Zarn Merches.
Marquez?
Okay.
It's Marquez.
Alexia Zarn Marquez, Vera Jarle, Fenella Lorch, Miss Lienhofer.
I love that so much.
It's so, that's such a, like a weird villain name, like a German villain name. Lienhofer.
Lienhofer. Yeah, it kind of is. Yeah.
And then Elizabeth Lienhofer. She used these names in the following cities: Oslo, Bergen, Stavanger, Trondheim.
I think that's it.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. But she came back and forth from these hotels. So, like, she was staying in Norway from, like, March of 1970 to, like, she stayed there in April. And then she randomly came back there at the end of October. And then she was there until, like, November. So
it's like going back and forth between hotels in different cities and stuff.
Mm-hmm. But then there was that gap from April until October. She mm-hmm. didn't go. She wasn't in Norway.
Yeah. So this is, like, obviously, like, a place of interest that she wanted to go. It was, like, somewhere in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's interesting.
Yep. So one place that she stayed at is the Hotel Neptune. And the woman left a strong impression on Alvhild Ragnes, who was a 21-year-old waitress at Hotel Neptune at the time. Quote, "My first impression of her was one of elegance and self-assuredness," she tells the BBC.
That's she really looked nice.
I know. It's that's such a nice, that's such a cute, nice thing to say about someone.
Yeah, it's like you're confident and beautiful. Like, that's mm-hmm. so cute. I love it.
She, quote, this is more of a quote, "She looked so fashionable. I wished to be able to mimic her style. In fact, I remember her winking at me. From my perspective, it felt as though she thought I had been staring a bit too much at her." End quote. So a little bit of a stalker there, Alvhild. So
no, she just thinks she's really pretty. That's really mm-hmm. cute.
"On one occasion while I was serving her, she was in the dining hall sitting right next to, but not interacting with, two German Navy personnel, one of which was an officer."
That gives me weird feelings.
I know, that's weird vibes.
Yeah, bad vibes.
So, police questioned several hotel staff who met the Istal woman, including Alvhild. They learned that, in addition to speaking English, the woman also sometimes used German phrases.
Okay.
They also learned that the woman often requested a change of room. On one occasion, she asked to change rooms 3 times.
I mean, that is kind of odd, unless you're very specific. Unless she just, like, said, "I need a different room," or something.
Yeah, it's up to 3 times, 3 times. That seems like a lot. 3 times is a lot,
yeah. Changing it once is fine, but 3 times is kind of a lot.
I also saw in, like, other sources that she would move the furniture around in her hotel room.
Maybe she just wants good feng shui, you know?
She would also sometimes... A lot of the time she would take some furniture pieces out of the hotel room and put it in the hallway.
That makes me think that, like, she was looking for a wire, right? Like, if she thought
yeah,
she
like a spot, something. Like something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that, oh, yeah,
so
I don't like
that. That leads us to, why did I, okay, remember, what did I tell you to remember, Katrina? Keep, or, and listeners, to keep back on the back burner?
A note.
The note. That is clue 5. The note. "By now, there are several rumors that the woman was a spy." Well, yeah, duh.
there's a lot of evidence, yeah.
There's a lot of evidence pointing that way. There weren't too many foreign tourists in Bergen then, and the fact that the woman seemed wealthy and well-traveled sparked a lot of speculation. I mean, if you're going to go to Norway, you'd probably go to Oslo, right? Like,
yeah,
that's where I would
town.
Go. Yeah. I mean, that's the capital and the biggest city, so why wouldn't she just go there?
Mm-hmm.
So, this was during the Cold War, and there were definitely a lot of spies in Norway, including Russian spies, says Gunnar Stahlsen, a Bergen-based crime author who was a university student at the time. There were also Israeli agents operating in Norway, as shown 3 years later when Mossad agents killed a man in Lillehammer that they had mistaken for a terrorist, he adds.
My. Okay. Yikes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, Norwegian intelligence services are investigating too, but they will not admit to it until decades later.
So this isn't just like a normal, you know, like, murder. This is, like, obviously they caught the attention of intelligence agencies, so they're like, this
weird.
Isn't normal.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really know if, like, you die in a foreign country, if they're, like, FBI or CIA, their version of that, like, their intelligence agency would investigate because you were a foreigner. I don't really know. But I think it is very odd that they did not admit to investigating.
Yeah, like,
because if it wasn't a big deal, they'd
say it. Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. they wouldn't be so secretive about it.
Yep. So something's up.
Yeah.
So, according to NRK, security services were interested in reports that the woman had been seen observing the military test out new rockets in western Norway, but there weren't any clear conclusions from their investigation reports. So she seemed interested.
Okay, so you mean, like, people actually saw her watching these tests, or she, they just, like, reported that she was interested in them?
I guess she was watching it, but, I mean, I think I would, too.
Yeah, I was guess, just a, yeah. Yeah, even, like, a tourist would be like, oh, what's that? That's interesting. Yeah, fair enough, yeah.
So, police eventually crack some of the coded note, but it doesn't provide any evidence that she's a spy.
Okay.
Instead, it appears to be a record of the places the woman visited. So, for example, 022, 028P are dates the 22nd to the 28th of October, and that she was in Paris.
Okay.
And that 029PS is the day she traveled from Paris to Stavanger. And then 029S matches the date she arrived in Stavanger on the 29th of October.
Okay.
So it's just like a way for her to remember where she had been, like a coded way. Okay. And again, there's a lot of similarities between this and the Somerton Man case. Like, we had the labels, we had the suitcase being found at the train stations, and now we have the weird coded message.
Yeah.
But the Somerton Man coded message just happened to be a grocery list.
Yeah, they're both lists, which is kind of odd, but yeah.
So police sent a description of the woman and sketches of what she may have looked like to several police forces abroad, but none of them can say or say who the woman is. They can't identify her.
Okay, or maybe they didn't want to. Maybe she worked for a government agency and then they're like, nope, don't know her.
Could be. And that brings us to clue six, the autopsy. Meanwhile, investigators complete an examination of the woman's body. They find an unexplained bruise on the right side of her neck that could have been the result of a blow or a fall. Oof. There are no signs that the woman had been ill. The autopsy also finds that the woman had never been pregnant or had a child.
Okay,
so her death is likely to have been a painful one, unfortunately. Oh. Quote, there were smoke particles in her lung, which shows that the woman was alive while she was burning, Tormund says.
I hate that.
Yeah, that's nightmare fuel. That's just really the worst, probably one of the worst ways that you can go.
Oh, yeah, it would be, like, being tortured or, yeah, anything while you're still alive and conscious. Ugh, no.
He found a high trace of petrol in the ground below the woman's body, which means we can state with certainty that petrol had been used to set her alight. That's what Tormund says.
I'm sorry, but that's kind of funny. There's a large amount of petrol around her body where she was burned, you know?
Probably that means that petrol was used at one point with her. Yeah, it's like...
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's like, thanks, Captain Obvious, thank you. The woman also had high concentration of carbon monoxide in her blood.
Ooh.
Yeah. So experts also established that there were about 50 to 70 sleeping pills from a foreign brand called Phenomel in her stomach.
Oh my God.
Although they had not been fully absorbed into her bloodstream before she died. 50 to 70. I just can't imagine. Yeah.
It's a lot.
That is a lot.
And the fact that they didn't even start to dissolve, really, or, like, go into her... She must have taken them very quickly, or been forced to take them very quickly before she was killed.
Maybe. So the autopsy concludes the woman died from a combination of carbon monoxide poisoning and ingesting a large number of sleeping pills.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't take 50 and 70 and be okay.
No, you're not, like, like, Amo... Amo Koyuvin in the last episode, he took 30 pills of meth. Koivunen. Isn't it Koivunen?
Yeah, Koivunen. Yeah.
Yeah. I finally got it. The day after we started recording, I struggled there so bad. And then now I got it.
Hey, you know, that it's hard. It's hard stuff.
Yeah.
The cause of death is announced to be a probable suicide, a view supported by Bergen's chief of police. But many find this hard to believe, just like us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We talked about it in the police, but as far as I remember, very few thought it was suicide. Yeah, Carl Harfler Oss says. Both the remote spot where her body was found and the method of suicide by fire strike him as strange. Me yeah, too.
Like, if you were gonna, most likely if you're gonna kill yourself, it'd probably be like in a hotel room or something, not unless you like love nature and that's like where you want your final moments to be, I guess. But even if she planned to like take all those pills, like that should have done it. Like it wouldn't, she wouldn't have needed to set herself on fire, which is a horrific way to go. So I mean, it all just, it doesn't add up at
all. It doesn't add up. Like, why would she kill herself by lighting herself on fire in a mm-hmm. mountain?
Yeah, it's just like, why? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Without any further leads, the case is closed, and the woman is buried in February of 1971. Mm-hmm. Police think the woman may be Catholic and organize a Catholic funeral for her. So according to a police report of the funeral, the coffin was decorated with lilacs and tulips, and the priest conducted a simple ceremony for the unknown woman who was put to the grave in a foreign country without any family present. That's kind of a mean thing to say, but
I think it was done out of respect though, because they didn't know who she was, right?
Yeah.
But this is such a beautiful thing to do for someone you don't know, right? You give her a beautiful funeral and decorate her casket with lilacs and tulips. That to me sounds really cool. That sounds so pretty and just like, oh.
So police still hope to find the woman's family. She is buried in a zinc coffin that won't decompose, and keep an album of photos from the funeral for her relatives.
That's so nice.
That is sweet.
Yeah. It's so smart too to put her in a zinc coffin, so that way if they could possibly get forensic evidence later, then they could still maybe get it from there, right?
Oh yeah, I think that was the point.
Yeah, makes mm-hmm. sense.
So Harold Osland was one of the investigators reluctant to let the case go. Quote, "My father could never put this case away," his son Tora says. "He never could accept that they had to close down the case."
Yeah, I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like everything's sketchy and you're like, why? I guess if you don't want to spend a lot of extra money and time on it, but it's kind of sad that they're just like, it's such a huge case and they're just like, oh, suicide, close it.
Mm-hmm.
That's sad.
Yeah, just like, yeah, brush it off.
Mm-hmm.
His father kept several of the police documents, and Tora eventually wrote a book about the Istal case. Over the years, the case has also inspired several crime writers and illustrators. What intrigues people is that it is an unsolved mystery. It is almost like following a crime novel, says Gunnar Stahlsen.
Yeah, fair enough, yeah.
Fair enough. Mm-hmm. So, now we are moving on to Clue 8, the teeth.
Ooh.
So, the Istal woman had distinctive teeth. 14 of them were filled, and she had several gold crowns. This was especially unusual for someone in her age range, and is not the type of dental work seen in Norway.
Okay.
So Gisla Bang, a professor of dentistry, keeps the woman's jaw in the hope that other experts will recognize the dental work. Nice. After his death, everyone assumes the jaw has been destroyed. Forensic doctor Inga Morald, who inherited the Istal woman files, says he was told the jaw had been thrown away because it was smelling.
That's so sad.
That's nasty. Like,
I mean, I wouldn't want something smelling either, but it's forensic evidence to a cold case.
Yeah, right? But it's like, what, are they going to put it in the coffin? With like the burnt body?
I mean, you could put it like in a like an airtight container, right?
Yeah, that might that's help. True.
Something vacuum like that.
Seal it.
Yeah, like do something to help.
No, you don't want to vacuum seal a delicate jaw.
Yeah, well, okay, I wasn't thinking about that. I was thinking about, like, keeping the, like, wrapping it up, you know, but, yeah.
Okay, but after investigative journalists at the NRK make queries about the Istal woman, Professor Morald finds the jaw deep in the cellar of Haukeland University's hospital's forensic archives. The find gives Norwegian police the opportunity to reopen the case and use the latest forensic techniques to try and identify the woman.
So if they wouldn't have found this, the jaw, then they wouldn't have ever looked at it ever again? Like, they would have been, like, just forgotten it?
I don't think so, because there's a lot of true crime people out there that are amateurs and they're still trying to figure stuff out.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The Norwegian Criminal Investigative Services, Kripos, and the University of Bergen start conducting isotope analysis on her teeth and looking at the chemical signature left by the elements that made up her teeth as they were being formed.
That's pretty cool.
That's way outside my pay grade. So, the tests involve oxygen isotope analysis, which can reveal the type of water the woman drank as she grew up and which areas the water came from, and then strontium isotope analysis, which can reflect the types of food the woman ate and the type of soil in the area where she grew up.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's like 23andMe or something.
I mean...
I think that's what it is.
Kind of, yeah, I guess, yeah. Isn't 23andMe, though, like...
You spit. Like, but they're still able to guess, like, what area of the world, like, you came from.
Okay. It's like ancestors? That's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, weird.
Okay. It's the first time Norwegian police have conducted isotope analysis on teeth, but they hope the findings will help them pinpoint the region where the woman lived.
So they didn't get the data
yet? No, they did. I just have to dig for it.
Okay.
Okay, that brings us to clue 9, the tissue samples. So DNA analysis is now one of the key tools police use in forensic analysis and identification cases. Jeez Louise.
We're going to say cases.
So embarrassing. Cases.
There you go.
So embarrassing. Oh, God. So it didn't exist back in 1970, but it turns out several tissue samples from the woman's organs, including from her lungs, heart, adrenal glands, and ovaries, have been stored at Auckland University Hospital. Professor Morald says, quote, "It has been a custom in most of Norway to keep tissue samples from post-mortem examinations. The samples are useful for repeat examinations and as a source of DNA."
Which is super smart, because if they couldn't, even if they couldn't use them really back then, now they can use them, which is amazing.
And for teaching probably as well.
Oh yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
So, the NRK and local police agree to send the samples off for DNA analysis. So, the head of forensics at West Police District says it's important to pursue the woman's identity because, quote, "somewhere in the world, there may be some relatives wondering where she went."
That's sad.
Mm-hmm. "We try to identify every unknown body so that the relatives can have an answer." While they wait for DNA results, NRK publish a documentary into the investigation and receive more than 150 tips from people interested in the case. So, in Norway, this case is a big enigma for people. "There's a lot of people who want some sort of closure in this case," says journalist Stahl Hansen.
Well, yeah, I mean, anybody that's interested in true crime wants to know what happened.
And they want an end to the case. Like a nice one. Like a Hallmark one.
This is not going to be a Hallmark movie.
So after months of work, scientists have an extended DNA profile of the woman. The latest results, published in 2017, show that the woman was of European descent, making the theory that the woman was an agent from Israel much less likely. So she was not part of Mossad.
Okay.
Norwegian police are set to issue an Interpol Black Notice, which seeks information on identified bodies with the new information. So European police forces will be asked to check their DNA databases to see if they find a match. Quote, okay. "If someone in her close family is in DNA registry somewhere, we will get a hit."
That would be interesting.
That would be interesting.
Like siblings or something?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be cool.
So the Istanbul woman case has been unsolved for the last 46 years, but now modern science has reopened the possibility of this elusive Nordic mystery being solved. And that was the BBC article. So these are theories. These are theories to answer the question of why this woman died on an isolated mountain in Norway.
Okay, yeah.
The most popular theory is that she was connected to espionage, so a spy, and it was the height of the Cold War in the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or we call it NATO, it's shorter, was testing a new weapon called Penguin missiles in Norway at the time. The country was likely knee-deep in Soviet spies, and the mystery woman may have been a courier, like a messenger, among them. Perhaps her handlers felt that she had compromised and bumped her off. Bumped her off having the nice word of saying, "we lit her on fire and killed her."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe the job was done by Western intelligence agencies.
Well, isn't that like, even if they wanted to bump her off, right? Isn't that the most messed up way you could do that?
Light someone on fire and then give them sleeping pills? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like there's that's a lot of a pretty
cruel way.
Yeah. So I feel like, I don't know, I guess like unless she was angering a lot of her handlers or whatever, but I feel like it'd be like a rival group or something that offed her that way, because if it was like her own organization, I feel like they wouldn't have done it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Okay, let's go to another theory.
Okay.
So another theory is that it was connected to an international crime organization, and that the outcome was similar to the Soviet spy theory, right? So yeah. Instead of the spy, she was in with the mafia. Or another crime organization.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense, because then it's more of like an example mm-hmm. of how, yeah.
Yep. Or, this is the last one, she was suffering from a mental illness that caused her to believe she was being pursued by an imagined threat, and she took her own life to end the torment.
See, that one I struggle with, because she was seen by so many people, and they said she was confident, and she was pretty, and that she didn't seem to be off, really, right? At least not by these people's interpretation of her.
Yeah.
Like, I can see, like, where she's moving furniture, you know, outside the hotel room, maybe that, like, I could see that being a mental illness kind of thing, but mm-hmm. I guess to me, it's hard to believe that she was, like, mentally unwell, I guess, in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So this next section, this is all like later developments, like stuff that has happened since 2017 that article that we read mm-hmm. was written. So this is in 2019 that this happened to. So the taxi driver who took the woman from the hotel to Bergen Railway Station was never found. Oh. In 1991, however, a taxi driver wishing to remain anonymous said that after picking up the unknown woman at the hotel, they were joined by another man for the ride to the train station. Creepy.
That's kind of creepy, yeah.
And in 2005, a Bergen resident who was 26 in 1970 told a local newspaper that after seeing the sketch circulated, he had suspected that the dead woman was a woman he had seen 5 days before the body was found when he was hiking on the hillside at Floyen. Surprisingly, she was dressed lightly for the city rather than a hike, and was walking ahead of two men wearing coats and looked, quote, to him, quote from the man, Southern.
Mm-hmm. So Southern Norwegian, not like Southern American.
I don't know. They could have like NASCAR hats or whatever. She appeared resigned and seemed about to say something to him, but did not. Oh. He went to someone he knew at the police to report this, but he was told to forget about it. Therefore, neither his name nor his alleged sighting was ever recorded at that time.
See, I don't like that they told him to forget about it, because that makes me think that they're in on it, and that's why they tried to say, oh, it was a suicide, forget about it.
Yeah.
Like, that creeps me out.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. And it's sad, too, because, like, to think back to and think that you saw her on her last moments and she maybe tried to ask for help, but then she was like, I don't want to get you in trouble, or she thought something worse would happen, but ugh, that'd give me nightmares too.
Nightmare fuel.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so this is more on the isotope analysis test.
Okay.
So it indicated that the woman had been born in about 1930, plus or minus 4 years. It can't be perfect.
Okay. But that's still a lot bigger. That's a lot better than 25 to 40 years old.
So she was born in or near Nuremberg, Germany, but had moved to France or the France-Germany border as a child. This reinforced earlier analysis of her handwriting, which suggested she had been educated in France or a neighboring country.
That's crazy that handwriting is different based on location.
Yeah, because you just don't really think about it, right?
Not handwriting, no.
No. Okay. So analysis also indicated she had been to a dentist in either East Asia, Central Europe, Southern Europe, or South America.
That's a wide variety.
That's a lot. Yep, that's a wild ride.
I can see Central Europe, though, if she's already, like, in France and Germany.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just a hop and a skip.
Yeah.
All right. That's all I have for you. I don't know how to end, like, the...
Yeah, because we still don't know, like, who it was or anything.
Yeah, so. I mean, I guess... Yeah, and the mystery has endured for almost 50 years.
Yeah, that's crazy. Hopefully, eventually, we'll be able to find somebody, like... That maybe, like, a sibling or, you know, somebody that she was related to, like, a cousin. Because she didn't have kids.
Nope.
So
she did not have kids.
Yeah. So hopefully DNA will help us figure out at least her family. Because then that would be easier to narrow down who it might have been.
Mm-hmm.
But
so, again, for sources, we used the BBC article, The Istanbul Woman, from 2017. Other things that I saw that I've used and or thought were interesting for sources were unidentifiedawareness.fandom.com. So that's like okay. a whole cold case database that fans go and communicate with each other.
Okay.
What is it? DoeNetwork.org, another one for cold cases, hence Doe Network.
Like Jane Doe.
Yep, Jane Doe, John Doe. Yep. And then soapboxy.com. And then the article is Who is the Istal Woman? Pretty cool.
Nice.
So that's all I got for you guys.
Nice.
Sorry it did not have a Hallmark ending, but sometimes, you know, there just aren't Hallmark endings in life.
Yeah, especially not in this situation.
Yep.
Yeah. Do we want to end on, like, a fun fact?
Yeah, that might be nice.
Okay, get some of the death and gross stuff out of the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so I got two to choose between.
All right.
Number 26 or 29?
29, please.
29? Okay, good. This is funny. Okay, so the Goodyear blimp, you know, the thing that flies over, like, ball games and stuff to advertise Goodyear, is the official bird of Redondo Beach, California. It's the bird.
I just am speechless on that one. I just don't have anything to say at this point.
I love it. Here's a little synopsis. It says the Goodyear blimp is nothing short of iconic, but we wouldn't classify it as a bird. Still, that doesn't stop Redondo Beach, a coastal city situated near the Goodyear blimp's home airport in Carson, California, from passing a resolution in 1983 to make the blimp its official bird.
Well, all right. I mean, that's great that the government over there, you know, government did something.
That they did something, that's where she's gonna end.
Yep.
Okay. All right, with that, Wanderers, we'll leave you with that fun fact. So thank you so much, Wanderers, for listening to another Foolish Wanderers podcast. If you'd like to check out the articles from this episode, I'll leave the link down below in the description. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, feel free to email us at fwplisteners@gmail.com.
And new episodes are out every single Wednesday, and you can listen to them from wherever you get your podcast from. And also, listeners, if you'd like to help out, you could leave a rating or a comment on the platform that you use to listen to your podcast. The ratings and comments really help us out because it sort of helps us get noticed or, you know, can in the algorithm. I don't know what else to say, but puts us in the algorithm some more.
Yeah, pretty much gets us more foot traffic.
Oh yeah, that's a better one. Yeah, edit that out and say just have you say foot traffic.
That's it.
Yep.
All right, Wanderers, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you guys next time.